Hello and welcome to another episode of DQ Chats. So I am Stephanie Tudor. I am the VP Darlo of Drama Queensland, and today I am joined by Drama Queensland member Solitaire Mark. So welcome, Sol.
Thank you.
And we have to say Happy World Teachers Day. So we thought, seeing that this episode is released on World Teachers Day, we would use this chance to delve a little deeper into all things curriculum. So we're going to have a chat today about Greek theatre and how we use it in our classrooms and how we use it across various year levels. So why do you like Greek theatre?
I think there's just something really special about going back to the origins or the roots of Western theatre. It's like going right back to the soul of drama. So I guess for me personally, I love that we're obviously dealing with some pretty big personalities, some major themes, and it really encapsulates that drama is the study of the human condition. And I guess from a teaching perspective, it because we do so much around the language of conventions and elements, Greek theatre has a wonderful set of conventions. So you're really developing that shared vocabulary with students, which is really easy for them to navigate the style and then put that into practice.
Yeah, and I really like how you say, you know, it's getting kind of to the soul of where we started, because I think that's really interesting too when saying to students, well, this is kind of the beginnings of it all, and, you know, going back and tracking it and the festivals and the gods and all of that. And then it really helps them understand that kind of heightened presentational style if you understand where it's come from.
Yeah. And as you say, like, it's not just even about the works itself. Mm. It's about how theatre was a part of their lifestyle and a part of that society and their religion.
Yep.
And so it's really great for history buffs as well, even if you're not just a drama nerd.
Well, yeah, I have to put myself in both of those categories, so I think that's why I like it too. When you say about going back to the beginnings and having that shared language, because I really like that idea of it, of being so enriched in their culture and so enriched in their kind of everyday, that we have these amazing heightened stories. And for the Greeks going to the theatre, they were stories that they knew, and they were stories that were passed down and that were kind of already known. And so that's a really interesting approach too. But also, when you're talking about conventions, the idea that some of our students are so familiar with things like chorus, because it is so present in so many, you know, contemporary productions, that when you go, well, this is where it first started, they go, oh.
Yeah, it's quite surprising.
Yeah. So that's really interesting as well. So what grades do you teach Greek theatre with?
I first introduced students to Greek theatre in grade 10.
Mm-hmm.
We don't focus on it purely in grade 10, though. It's part of a bit of a crash course unit called Introduction to the History of Western Drama. So we actually cover, obviously, from ancient Greek theatre. We go through medieval theatre, commedia, Elizabethan, realism, epic, absurd. So it's a real crash course. It's a bit of a taster for them. So obviously Greek theatre stands out because that's where we start with that.
Yep.
And that unit is really quite black and white in that we're looking at the main conventions and how the actor manipulates their voice and movement between those different styles. And then obviously when we move into the senior years, that's where we're sort of playing around with the rules that we've established of those styles. And then we can get a bit more creative and experimental with contemporary theatre blending with ancient Greek theatre. So we of course then touch on it in unit 4, the transform unit.
Yeah. Do you find that students having that taste in year 10, that they can break the rules easier in unit 4 because they kind of go, oh, well, I know this, it's not completely new?
Yeah, definitely. And that's it. Before you break the rules, you've got to know what the rules are.
Yeah.
So they definitely think back to their to what we do in year 10, and they can build off that. And it is amazing. They do tend to retain that knowledge. It just takes a little bit of a refresher
somewhere in year 12.
But yeah, there's definitely that connection. And I think that even though it is pretty intense unit, a crash course unit covering all of those styles, it does actually give them that sense of how theatre has evolved, but also how some things are borrowed and just repeated, but in a different way. It's not totally new stuff all the time. So particularly if we're going from ancient Greek theatre to then a Shakespearean unit, they can see the connections there between those two styles, and that, William obviously stole a lot from them. So they're making those connections with their learning.
And that would be really good for them in that transform unit, because I think sometimes students struggle so much with, how do I come up with something? And I need to create something completely new.
Exactly.
And having that kind of historical background, you can go, each kind of style is a reflection or a rejection of the previous one. We talk about Brecht came out of the rejection of realism or all of those things. So that would be a nice connection.
Yeah, and that's quite inspiring, I think, as future theatre practitioners. They don't have to have this sense of, oh my goodness, I'm reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
It's we can build off what somebody else has done and make it more of a reactionary approach for how they want to create theatre in the future.
Yeah, so when you do it in year 10, do you look at a specific text or how do you approach that?
Because of the nature of it being so quick and so fast, we don't tend to look at a particular text.
Yep.
I do tell them a little bit about some of the characters that they might meet along the way, like whether it's Oedipus or Antigone. And we use actually quite a bit of the text from Antigone just for practical exercises. So when we're looking at voice and that really heightened declamatory style of presentation, we use the phrase or the section of text from Antigone, the O ray of sunlight most beautiful that ever shone on Thebes, which is towards the start of the play. And we're really looking at sort of the common consonant sounds, the S's and the T's, and really getting students to be very mindful of their diction and articulation. Yeah. So it's really just those core skills that we're using, but with a text that sounds different to what they've been doing previously in drama.
Greek has this nice way of layering in that poetic, which Shakespeare does as well, but also having these really tight, compact stories as well that they can really dive into, and so much is said so quickly. I really like the idea that in a Greek play, everything happens in a day.
Yes.
I think one of the challenges my students face a lot of the time is, you have to know all this backstory and you have to know all of these things that happened before. One of the texts we do in Transform is Medea. You have to know the Golden Fleece. You have to know what happened there. You have to know Jason and the Argonauts. And I'm like, yeah, but for the Greeks, they knew all of that. Those were the stories.
It's just ingrained in their culture.
They were the myths. They were the, everyone knew the story of Medea. Euripides was just the person who wrote it down and put his own spin on it.
Yeah.
And I find that's really interesting. And talking about that and then how that kind of impacts, contemporary playwrights. Mm. So we look at Greek first, very, very briefly in year 8. And we do it with Ivy Shambit, actually.
Yeah.
And looking at, how do you introduce that chorus? So we start in a unit where the students do a performance of Ivy Shambit, and we start introducing those chorus elements and voice and movement and presentational acting and heightened style. So,
and do you introduce it saying that we are now looking at Greek conventions?
No, when we do it in Ivy, we look at it at just the idea of chorus. So we explore that idea of chorus and presentational acting, heightened language, and how we can use chorus and how chorus in this play comments on the action and works in the action and kind of is fluid between the two. And then in term 3, I think, we head into a unit called Uncovering the Past, and then that's when we hit them with Greek. So uncovering our unit, Uncovering the Past, is all about Greek myths and legends.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of look back and go, remember all of that chorus stuff we did?
This is where it came from.
This is where it came from. Yep. Surprise!
Yeah.
The students go, oh, that doesn't seem as intimidating. Because sometimes I think when you introduce a historical style,
yeah,
they go, it's so far removed from what I do. It's
yeah.
so far removed from
yeah.
the plays I go and see.
Yeah.
Whereas we find it's a nice entry.
Yeah, yeah, in. Definitely.
Yeah.
And what you were saying before about how something like Ivy Shambert, you know, has that core narrative, but the chorus then comments on the action. One of the resources that I use in the Year 10 unit to show that in a modern context is I show them a bit of a snippet from Woody Allen's Mighty Aphrodite.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has, I mean, it's not appropriate probably for them to watch the whole thing, but particularly the first scene is the Greek chorus in a Greek amphitheater. They're in very traditional costume. They have masks. They move exactly how we expect an ancient Greek chorus to do so. But then the film quickly changes to the characters sitting in a modern day setting in a cafe, and then they start to realize that the chorus has been just used as this vehicle to comment on what is going on for the central protagonists. And just to show them that visually, I found is really good for the students, because they can they have that to tap into before then that they have a go at doing it practically themselves.
And I think you've touched on something that I think is really difficult for students, is that that traditional Greek style is really hard for them to go, well, how do I present that? So looking at other ways to kind of link in to start with, and that's why our Year 8 unit, when we actually look at Greek, we layer in viewpoints and physical theatre, and they take a Greek myth. We use Icarus as our kind of guiding text, because I think there's a lot of things that you can make contemporary around that. We look at, you know, being trapped by your parents and freedom and getting away and, you know, rebelling, not listening to people, all of those things. And then we look at Midas, we look at Pandora, and pulling out themes and layering on, well, what can we take from the Greek style and what can we adapt? Because I think a lot of that heightened language, heightened emotion, presentational acting, we don't use mask, but that commenting on the action really comes down to, well, at the heart of Greek tragedy or Greek comedy is really that lesson and that moral learning, and that the audience needs to walk away being challenged or that thought provoking.
And that's just exactly what the chorus itself represents. It's such an interesting concept in its own right. It's not only the internal thoughts and emotions of the characters, it's also the voice of society. It can be quite self-reflective at times, but it can also be the challenger. So how that works even from a playwriting perspective, and how students could then, if they are doing something more along a devising or a script writing task, how you can approach a character or a situation from multiple perspectives, which of course then fits very nicely into the transform unit that we do in Year 12.
Yeah.
You mentioned before using viewpoints though in Year 8, and I find, because we do viewpoints, we do a bit of it in Year 10 in a physical theatre unit, and then we use it again in transform. But it's a wonderful rehearsal and devising technique. But I find sometimes with students, it can either go really well or it can flop. And how do you find that in Year 8?
Look, we don't do so much of the grid and the open viewpoints. Mm-hmm. We really introduce the viewpoints as a language.
Okay.
And we come back to it at the end of Year 10, where we kind of go, hey, remember all of this language? Remember when we talked about all of these viewpoints? This is how we use them. So in Year 8, I think it's the same way that we introduce Greek theatre. We use the conventions, we use the terminology, and we kind of hint at what we're talking about and then don't really hit them with it until Year 10. Because, yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I think if I tried to do grid work or open viewpoints with a class of year eights. I just, and look, really hope that teachers out there have year eights that are gunning and really excited to do that. I just wouldn't trust my year eights because they would literally be climbing up the wall and be like, well, this is my interesting use of architecture. Now I'm stuck. How do I get down? No, but yeah, but you said something about transform. So let's talk about that. So what text do you use and how do you kind of approach transform?
And I think I've got a lot of my inspiration from transform from you. Exactly. I too use Midea. But I think the thing that really struck me a few years ago when we were talking about the new syllabus coming in and this idea of transform, I always approached this idea of transformation and taking a classic text and turning into something more contemporary. I always just looked at it from a contextual point that, okay, this is how we do it. We just update the setting. We update the costumes. We update the language so it sounds a little bit like what they was originally written. And then you said to me one day, well, if we look at really what the syllabus is also asking us to do is that word reframe. And that has really changed my entire thinking of transforming something. So yes, we still do a bit of contextual work with we look at Medea in its original form, the Penguin Classics version, and then we do some contextual work with updating Medea so that students can have a connection with the characters and even in some ways empathize with the characters. But then we're ultimately leading towards this idea of how we can reframe it and who aren't we hearing from? How do we change that lens? And there is so much there, particularly with Medea, of who we don't hear from.
Yeah, and there's some really good versions about that as well. I know the Kate Mulvaney version, she completely changes that and really is by shifting the perspective and shifting the lens. So if you don't know that version... She takes the story and sets it in the boys' bedroom, and Medea walks in and out of the room, and they talk about, you know, dad's new girlfriend, and one of the boys has a jumper that was made from the golden fleece, and so it's contemporary, but you also see the child perspective that you don't get in the original.
Yeah, definitely, and it's just so interesting because Medea does drift in and out of that story, but she's not the focus.
No.
And it is really, it's a very also realistic version of two young boys locked in a room and only hearing parts of their parents' story and their parents' breakdown. And how they even pass the time in that play is really interesting. So when you, I've never seen it performed, but even when I've read it, just the script, just how a lot of it is physical action, what the boys are doing to pass that time, and then how that then links into some bigger conversations about what's going on with mum.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good example to use with students when you're looking at that idea of contemporary text too, because it is a completely different take on it. And, you know, when we're talking about contemporary theatre in that Transform unit, the students could do anything. They can go down, you know, a physical theatre path. They can go down a more kind of postmodern path, you know, the access to, you know, cinematic theatre and kind of take it anywhere. So starting with that lens shift kind of opens that up.
Yeah, yeah.
You do something really interesting with Medea with Instagram, which I have now stolen and adapted, but let's talk about that.
So I guess this is a little bit what I was saying before about just, we start with updating the context of the work, and, you know, students always love an opportunity to use their devices, of course, and engage with social media. So we create a modern Medea's Instagram page. So the students, they just run with this because they're obviously very familiar with that territory, and they come up with a unique Instagram handle for their version of Medea. So it could be, you know, at Mistreated Medea or at Mad Medea. And this is really about stepping in her shoes.
Yeah.
And what are the kinds of things that if Medea was here today going through this sort of experience, which a lot of women do, what sort of stuff would she be putting on her feed?
Yeah.
What would she be thinking about? And they have the opportunity to approach it in any way. They can put themselves in the pictures, or it could be quotes that they think would inspire her or encapsulate her frame of mind at that point in time. It could be just things that Medea herself would take pictures of in her own environment. That really just sort of show the headspace that she's in. We don't just give them free rein from the whole play there. We really tend to look at Medea's first monologue, where she makes some brilliant points about that men rule women, that divorce is seen as a disgrace, or my favorite is that childbirth is more painful than going into battle.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And I really get the students to break down that monologue first and then try and find some images or quotes that connect to those things that she's been vocalizing. And obviously at that point in the play she is very mad. It's actually the first time we see her, and she's got a lot going on there. So there's a lot there for students to engage with and then to take in another direction through her Instagram page.
I like how you start with the monologue and start with breaking down the text, because I think that really leads nicely, you know, into what they have to do. I did a little bit differently this year. I think it was the first or second lesson back from COVID. And I was like, I need to get these kids up and doing stuff. So we did a storyboard of Medea. And so this is kind of a technique I've adapted a little bit and used a lot now that the IA2 is in existence. And really, when we look at a text, we often go, okay, well, what are the key moments? Create, you know, 5 or 6 freeze frames that are the key moments and give them titles. And so we did that with Medea after reading the text. What do you think the key moments are? And then we said, okay, well, what do you think the key moments are if we transform or shift the lens and it's from Jason's point of view, or the kid's point of view, or Gloss's point of view. And I'm going to be controversial there and say Gloss, not Glorke.
I'm so glad you said it first, because I have no idea.
I know.
And we actually take a bit of a vote in class on
how we say our name. I'm down with that. So sorry to the people that I'm not saying it right, but you know, that's how we do it. But that was really interesting, because then I broke them up into groups and we talked a lot about, well, what do we think this person's style is? Mm-hmm. And the students got really into that idea of, you know, one of their Medeas was really, you know, open about her feelings and really putting her whole life out there on social media. And then one of the Medea groups was like really a little bit more secretive and cryptic in the way. So we had a really lovely shot, because we went crazy with the props room and the costumes.
Nice.
Yep. And we had Gloss and Jason, and Gloss was in her wedding dress. And the shot was like from the leaves behind, like, Medea had rocked up to rocked up to Gloss's dress fitting and was like looking through the curtains and looking through the grass to kind of see what Gloss was up to. And then like the next shot was like Medea in her own wedding dress, and so really that kind of vengeful, cryptic Instagram. And then from that we took the idea of, well, what is the theme from those? What is the difference between that Medea to the Medea that is just so hurt that she can't, you know, she can't go on? You know, when they first talk about Medea, they talk about her, you know, weeping and not being able to get out of bed, compared to Jason. And then we go back to layering in those classic Greek conventions. So that's a really nice way.
Yeah, an entry point in.
Yeah.
And when you get students to look at the other characters, whether it's Jason or Gloss, or the boys, do you find students have a particular are they led or attracted to some of the other characters more than others? Like, do they automatically always just go to Jason?
Well, I teach in an all-girls school, so we have very strong opinions when Jason says things to Medea about, you know, I can't even think of any of the lines, but there's a couple of lines in there where he kind of asserts his dominance and talks about Medea, or the lines that you were talking about when Medea talks about, you know, of all creatures on earth, women are the most wretched, all of those things. So sometimes the girls get quite fired up.
Yeah, and he says a lot of stuff about, like, that she should be, you know, grateful.
Yes.
And
I'm doing this for
you. I'm doing
you.
This as a favor for you. Yeah.
And so our Jason this year wasn't portrayed very well. He was very vain and full of himself and all about the gram. And all about making himself look good. But we had two really interesting perspectives of Glorce, where one of the groups portrayed her as quite naive and innocent and kind of didn't really know what she was getting herself into. And they really connected with that through the explanation of her death, when she talks about, when the messenger talks about her putting on the crown and then her dancing around the room and the students were saying, well, you know, she's very vain, but that kind of feels like she's very young. Like she doesn't really know what's happening. So they looked at that idea that she's just this girl caught up in these other people's marriage and this other people's world. And then another group went down the more powerful route. And I think that's because we also touched upon this year the Susie Miller version of Medea, which, if you've read it, makes Glorce a whole different character and really
a big player
and is really making really strong comments about, you know, well, I'm doing this and I know what I'm doing to you, Medea, and Jason and I are in love and you've got nothing on us. So I think those things are interesting too, because when you come back to it in the heart of Transform, they have to be true to the text. You know, certain things, no matter what text you're doing, you know, Oedipus has to sleep with Jocasta. You know, Antigone has to bury her brother. And then, you know, end up in the cave with Haman. Like, we can't get away from those key things. But how do we make that relevant? How do we make it contemporary without also minimizing the grandeur of these stories?
Of the situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's where we kind of started talking about this. These stories are so epic.
Yeah.
They are so big.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, it's about leading the students into a way that they can really grapple with such huge concepts that are still so relevant. But when you start talking about them, you know, if we just started saying, oh, well, we're going to do a play about infanticide or filicide, or we're going to talk about, I shouldn't say infanticide because they're not infants, but we're going to talk about, you know, incest, or we're going to talk about, you know, any of those things, kids go, whoa. And obviously that's not how I start my lessons.
No. But imagine if you did.
Yeah, I know. I think it'd be very different. But, you know, we are talking about things that happen in a day, and they're so quick and there's so much that's happening. And sometimes students are overwhelmed by, well, how do I take that and make it my own?
But see, like what you were saying with there's such grand, big issues, that's the beauty, again, of Greek theatre in particular for students, is to say theatre is a place where you can wrestle and discuss some really big topics and in a fairly safe space.
Yeah.
And then you can leave the theatre and have your own opinions and discuss that more. And I think the National Theatre has a brilliant set of YouTube clips, particularly where they talk about Medea. And one of the points that one of the university professors made about Greek theatre is that, you know, Greek theatre was written by men, performed by men, and the audience were men. And you get these female characters like Antigone, Medea, and
even the Trojan women,
exactly.
Troy, you know,
and you go, isn't that interesting that men were staging, performing, and watching these incredible stories about women? And then you go, why?
Yeah.
So like, and they make this point in the clip that because theater was the place where they could discuss that. Mm. Not so much on the streets, not in their homes, certainly not with their wives,
yeah,
but in the theatre, that was where they would wrestle with those topics. And that point alone is really important for students today in seeing the value of theatre for why it is important. Mm. This is where we get to, in that safe space, chat about that.
Yeah. And I think that's a really lovely way also to end their journey in drama, to kind of go, well, let's look back.
And it's like full circle. Started.
Yeah. And yeah. And kind of, what are the things that we're still grappling with?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I just wanted to, we just talked about National Theatre, but what other resources or, you know, other places do you draw upon? We talked about Susie Miller's Medea, Kate Mulvaney's, Dan Evans, Oedipus Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Mm. Now, that would be a text that I would be really looking at how we can use with students, because there's some great stuff in there, and the way he's taken the story of, I mean, Oedipus and how that has all evolved and transformed it.
Mm.
Although, make sure you read it. Make sure you, you know your school context. I use excerpts from it, but would never read the whole thing with... Yeah, I use excerpts from it. But what other places do you draw on, or what other texts do you use?
Yeah, so I think because also even though we're drama practitioners and we're obviously trying to focus on performance, we can't forget that there is that heavy written component in drama with analysing and evaluating work. So I also show students the Zen Zen Zo production of Medea, The River Runs Backwards. Particularly from... The viewpoint that when we read a Greek tragedy, we don't see death happen on the stage. Yeah. It is always described by the messenger or a prophet, or an oracle. So we need to look at that as well as how can we physicalize that. Yeah. And the Zen Zen Zo production shows Glauce and Creon's death, obviously in a highly physical theater style. And that's where I actually start really with looking at how we can analyze the elements, analyze some conventions, and do some written work by looking at that. And once again, it also shows students the possibilities that they have with what aren't we seeing?
Yeah.
And let's have a go at physicalizing what we're not seeing.
Mm. And I use some, again, National Theatre. There is some great clips on Introduction to Chorus, Introduction to Greek Theatre. There's some clips about Medea. There's a really good, it's a long clip, but In Conversation with Helen McCroy, where she talks about her doing Medea, but also their version of Antigone. And they have taken Antigone and set it in an underground bunker and so transformed that in a completely different way. And there's some really lovely parts of just, well, you could just look at that first monologue and then look at how it's transformed. And they've worked in some creating of chorus there and how they've kind of used that. And that's also really good when you're talking about things like physical theater or using that movement component too of contemporary theater. And how do we make it so it's not so how do we make it so it's not so heavily reliant on just the body, but we're using the body in terms with dialogue, in terms of all of that, and making it more accessible, I guess, to a wider audience?
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else that you use that you just went, yeah, that's gold? I use it time and time again.
Not so much in terms of resources that I haven't already mentioned. Mm. I guess just... more some of the activities that we do. So the Spectrum of Difference I find is always great for Greek theatre because of the justifying different viewpoints and breaking down the tragic hero. Getting students to actually position themselves on that spectrum and then justify why they align more with that character or approve of that character's actions, but then also knowing that that spectrum is quite fluid. So at any point in time they can change their position. So using those more physical tools, even if we're doing something with justifying, how can we get students up on their feet and actually positioning themselves in the room to really prove that point?
And I think something you've touched on there is Greek theatre has the ability to get such strong opinions out of students. Yeah. And I think that's why I come back to it time and time again, because it doesn't matter who you agree with, who you think the tragic hero is, you know, at the end of the day, it's the process of students wanting to say so much about that. And I think that's where they're able to create really good theatre.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as you said, theatre's about wanting to say something. It's about wrestling with those big ideas. And so if they feel really passionate about this character shouldn't have done this, or I couldn't believe they did this, or, you know, I wish Creon would just, you know, put his hubris aside and just kind of do what's right. I'm talking Antigone Creon, not Medea Creon, because, you know, popular name in the Greeks. But that's where they're able to go and really dig their teeth into these texts.
Yeah, and you can have those really beautiful moments where you actually don't say much as the teacher then. Yeah. If you give them that structure, like a spectrum of difference, you start it as the facilitator, but then they essentially get so passionate and so engaged in that, obviously after doing a lot of work with the text first, but then they can take that and you can have a whole lesson of really just you're listening to the students debate and wrestle and justify those characters.
Yeah, it's nice to say after that, well, there's all your ideas, go run with it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Now, I know there's so much out of Greek theatre that we could have touched upon, so obviously this is going to be a topic that we come back to again, and we might delve into some other texts or look at some other ways to approach Greek theatre. But if you listening have anything that you would love us to talk about, love us to touch upon about Greek theatre, or anything that you do that you really go, yeah, this would be a great activity, we would love to hear about that. But thank you so much for joining me, Sol.
Thank you for having me.
And we will see you next time on DQ Chats. Thank you very much. And again, I hope you have a fantastic World Teachers Day.